So good morning. As you can see from the presentation and from your program, Christina Meneses, the senior staff attorney for the Networks Eastern Region, was supposed to be here doing this presentation. Christina is in the final couple weeks of her pregnancy, and so bicoastal travel was not in the cards. So I am the poor man's substitute for Christina Meneses, but I will do my very best. I have worked with Chris on this particular issue. I just want to point out, because I'll forget if I wait until the end, that the networks work in on this issue of bullying, particularly within the LGBT community, culminated in a symposium that we held last year at the University of Maryland School of Law, and also many of the presentations from that symposium were published in the University of Maryland's Journal of Race, Religion, Gender, and Class. This is an off-print of Christina's article, which is actually very similar to the presentation that I'll give today, and I have copies of it here for anyone who'd like to take one. I had asked Christina to autograph them, but she did not. In any case, so that's I have these available for you, and it really will give a lot more depth to some of the issues that we'll talk about today. So first, my presenter disclosure. I work for the state. No one gives me money. I give no one money. I have nothing to disclose. It's kind of sad to say I have no relationships to disclose because, you know, I have lots of friends. I really do. In any case, just to set the tone first about what really is bullying. Bullying is one of those words that's probably been overused a bit in our culture today. You know, one side comment or the like, does that constitute bullying? But for the purposes of our discussion and for really the purpose of developing policy, we need to have a good definition of bullying. And what you see here are some of the categories of behavior that can constitute bullying. So we're talking about intimidation, the intent to cause fear or distress in the victim. Typically, we're talking about repeated acts of intimidation. That's not to say that one single act shouldn't be actionable by, for example, a school personnel or something, but really bullying is the repeated kind of attacks on the individual. Real or perceived imbalance of power can come, particularly if you remember being a teenager, that super popular guy or girl in the class seemed to be more powerful for you. And in some ways they were. Their social power may have been greater than the victim's social power. So that's when we're talking the imbalance of power. And then, of course, it can be physical abuse. It can be name-calling, social isolation, or other activities intended to cause distress. A bit of a stereotype here, but boys do tend to engage a bit more in verbal or threats of physical harm or physical harm, whereas girls resort a little bit more to the verbal abuse and particularly to social isolation and exclusion, spreading rumors, which I'm sure, again, if you can all remember being teenagers, whether it was you or someone who you know, that can be equally distressing as the physical harm. So just to set the table again with what GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, does an annual report about the culture in the schools, the school climate survey. And so this is the most recent data that we have. And so you can see nearly 100%. If you want to take this chair and put it there or something, that'd be fine. So nearly every child surveyed had heard a homophobic remark of some sort during their class day, and more than half of them frequently heard negative comments about another student's gender expression. Sadly, more than 50% of them heard those remarks from teachers or other school personnel. And this is a particularly acute problem for bullying within the LGBT community. And again, nearly all of them express distress over hearing. Again, sticks and stones, but words can hurt just as much. And again, you can see the data here about the type of abuse that that these children are suffering. So obviously being verbally harassed because of their sexual orientation or their gender expression, but nearly 40% of them suffered some sort of physical harassment. And this is the lowest level of physical contact, getting shoved into the lockers, maybe getting pushed in gym class or something. But 18%, again, you know, one in five were victims of physical assault. They were punched, they were kicked, they were, you know, hit in a way intended to cause harm, and that was because of their their sexual orientation. So these numbers are, you know, are pretty staggering. If we look at particularly with respect to young women who express as lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, they are much more the target of bullying, which I think, how many of you would have thought that? Yeah, not me. And so when I read the first Glisten report a couple of years ago before our conference, I was surprised to see the rates were particularly high among young girls, and they feel particularly unsafe in school and suffer very significantly. And so what is different about LGBT bullying. Very often these young people lack the support systems that other children might have at home. If you are being bullied because of a disability or because of your ethnicity or your religion, you're probably getting a lot of support at home. Your family is fighting for you. Your family is trying to make you feel better about the circumstances. But a lot of young children who are homosexual or questioning or transgendered are not able to talk about the issue at home. In fact, they may be equally, you can come in and stand if you want. If you want to grab this chair, it's not going to bother me while I'm talking. We're in this teeny tiny room. So they don't have that support system at home, and they may in fact be having the opposite problem, that at home they're receiving the same type of reaction from family that they are at school. Also, as you could see, if more than 50% of them heard negative or homophobic comments from teachers and school personnel, that's hardly then a resource that you feel that you can reach out to. So those traditional resources of support are typically not available for our young people in the LGBT community. So that's just a little more specific data about the children. The other is the kind of the culture or other parents not being, you know, supportive of the notion that is bullying to make fun of someone for their gender expression or their sexual orientation. So you can see the statistics here. So what is the health impact? Because we're here about public health, and it's pretty significant. Of course, the first is the increased rate of suicide, which has now been termed bullycide in some quarters, that LGBT students are 3 to 4 times more likely to attempt suicide, not as a result of some underlying psychological problem, but as a result of the depression and anxiety that they feel from being constantly harassed at school. So you can see the other very common health effects of being bullied. And really, these apply across the board to any young person who's being bullied. It doesn't actually mention here, but all these things then contribute to lesser performance in school, right? Lower performance in school, probably more absences. Who wants to go to school if that's the environment and this is how you're feeling? You're not able to concentrate on your schoolwork. So it does interfere with the education, and that's important for a legal reason I'll talk about in a moment. Then also, actually, there are health effects of being the bully. So we know that bullies are, you know, we can feel sorry for them too, right, a little bit of sympathy. They are feeling themselves anxiety, depression. There's a reason that they're lashing out at other people. There's a reason that they are engaging in that, behavior that's unacceptable. And these are the outcomes that we tend to see in the bully. They also have depression. They are more likely to engage in substance abuse. They're more likely to be physical abusers of a spouse or a child as they get older. So there's another reason that we should look at this from a public health perspective. And then finally, the third parties. Probably most of us in the room were at the very least witnesses to bullying when we were growing up. And this is the largest part of the population, right? There are fewer victims and fewer bullies than there are those young people who are watching it and not knowing what to do. You know, you're either going to have the stress and the fear that comes from standing up to the bully on behalf of the person being bullied, or you're having the absolute internal turmoil when you go home that you didn't do anything because you knew what the right thing to do might have been. And so the third party children are also highly impacted and have, you know, a negative health effect on them. So what doesn't work with bullying? That's what we know a bit, is that the traditional isolation of the two parties. So if two kids are engaged in fighting because, I don't know, the one hit on the other one's girlfriend, or, you know, one took the other's spot on the soccer team, and there's a bit of, you know, of anger between the two of them. Isolating the two children, keeping them apart during the school day, bringing them into the counselor and talking to them is the traditional approach to resolving that problem. Not so in this particular circumstance. Obviously, isolating the children is not going to resolve the problem, and the intervention skills of school personnel who, unfortunately, again, are often engaging in this behavior hasn't been found to be particularly effective. So what, as lawyers, might we say? Let's sue someone, right? I'm not that kind of lawyer, and I doubt many of you are, but some people think that. So there is this concept, as I indicated, that Title IX, but the same one that gives us women's sports, actually, and I have the language quoted here, so let me pull it, does provide a cause of action. So Title IX is designed to make sure that no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subject to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So Title IX has been used in bullying circumstances for LGBT youth. The problem is, and there has been a tiny bit of success, the problem is the child has to have been really, really seriously harmed for you to have a cause of action under Title IX. It's a deliberate indifference standard for the school, so the school has to have demonstrated deliberate indifference to the child's problem, and the child has to demonstrate severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive behavior. And the courts have construed that as a pretty strict standard. So to use Title IX, too little, too late. Really difficult case to prove. It is available in those, you know, extraordinary circumstances, but it's not going to prevent the problem, and that's the goal of public health. So how should we address public health? Address this problem from a public health perspective? And that's where I ask you to, if you want much more detail on these laws, to read through Christina's piece, as well as, and the last slide will have a link to the 50-state survey that we've done at the network on the different states' laws that address bullying in the school scenario and whether they specifically address LGBT youth. So what's most important is that your state law specifically designate LGBT sexual orientation, sexual identity, et cetera, as one of the protected bases for the bullying statute. It sends both a cultural message to the school personnel, to students, that this is an issue that warrants attention, that this is something we care about in our community. But it also gives the LGBT youth a cause of action in many circumstances, or at least a basis for demanding that the school take action. So you want to make sure that you have the enumeration of LGBT youth in the protective categories. And you can see 13 states, and actually, I think there's a mistake on one of these slides, and it might be the inclusion of Arkansas here. Is that Arkansas, AK, right? Yeah. Alaska. Sorry. Thank you. I had a moment right there. I was like, no. And Chris had pointed it out to me, and now I'm blanking on it. But our 50-state survey does indicate all of the different laws. And so you can actually, it's all hyperlinked, so you can actually click on the statutes and read how they have designated in the statute the LGBT enumeration. So that is critically important. Also, having a really good definition of bullying in the statute is particularly important. You want the bullying to be defined at a level that we all accept is really bullying and not simple conduct between young people so that it can't be abused. But you also want it to be at a level where it doesn't have to be that the child has suffered significant harm by the time school personnel should be expected to take action. And then also the procedures for handling the circumstance under, you know, in which LGBT youth is subject to harassment or bullying in school should be very particularly spelled out. This is actually true for any child who's been bullied. There should be specific procedures because what we've seen is that school personnel don't feel equipped to handle this. And so state laws or local school regulations should make clear on-site professionals how they're supposed to handle this, and obviously education and training for those people in the community. And finally, helping students by creating gay straight alliances and other student groups that are intended to support the young people who feel rather unsupported, who again, if we took that third group, those bystanders, and gave them voice, the young people who are having who are experiencing bullying would actually realize that they have a lot more support than they realize. And so in part it's also empowering the straight kids who recognize this bullying shouldn't occur and giving them a way to feel comfortable expressing that to the young people who are experiencing the harm. So I just want to point out that I am ending exactly on time with the slide that has the link to the 50-state survey. If you go to the Network for Public Health Law's website and type in bullying, you'll find it pretty readily as well. So thank you for your attention.